Boy, this is the hard part. I want to thank you, the audience. You folks have been just incredibly loyal. This is tricky. We wouldn't be on the air without you people. Secondly, this has been the greatest 22 years of my life.
That's a clip from Jay Leno's final farewell as the host of The Tonight Show on NBC last week. This morning, we will talk about the changing face of late-night television and why The Tonight Show is regarded as an institution on network television. Good morning. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Did you watch Leno's last show, his last show? Are you sad to see him go or excited for what's ahead as Jimmy Fallon takes over next Monday night? You can join us this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, or you can reach us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. My guest this hour is Robert Thompson, a professor of television and pop culture and the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, take us back in time a bit. Remind us how, after Johnny Carson's long run as the host of The Tonight Show, Jay Leno was selected to become the host of The Tonight Show.
Right. Well, that was Late Night Wars 1, way back in the early 90s. And Leno had been the permanent guest host the host when Johnny took off, which was frequently. And so Letterman had been doing that for a long time, but Letterman had the show right after Carson. So there was this kind of assumption that Letterman was going to get the get moved up, just like Fallon was moved up from that show this time. But Leno, as having been this replacement host for Carson, also wanted it. And NBC had themselves in a position where they had one job, two people. They didn't want to lose either one of them. They ultimately chose Jay Leno. Letterman went off and started the late night tradition at CBS, went into first place and beat Leno for a while, but then Leno took over and the rest is history. He was the number one person in late night until he left just last week.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more maybe about NBC and the politics there later in the show. I also wanted to ask, though, when it came down to Letterman versus Leno, why was Leno the one that won out?
Well, in the end, I guess NBC made the right decision. It was done ham-handedly. By the way, it was so dramatic that not only did Bill Carter write an entire book about it, HBO then adapted that book into a made-for-TV movie. So this is a replacement decision that was the stuff of high drama. In the end, I guess the idea was that Leno was still working in the Carson tradition. He was a middle-of-the-road comedy guy. Carson told jokes, and Leno told jokes. He fit right into it. Whereas what Letterman was doing after Carson, back in the 1980s on NBC, was completely revolutionizing late night. I remember I was in graduate school when Letterman started on late night, and we couldn't believe what he was doing. He'd throw stuff off the roof of the studio and watch it break. He'd put stuff in big drill presses and watch it get crushed. He had episodes that were shot upside down. He'd get into a Velcro outfit and jump onto and stick to a wall. Now this stuff seems no big deal. Back then, it was completely different than anything Carson had done. Letterman was taking little bits that Ernie Kovacs had done in the 50s and Steve Allen and just bringing them to this Dada kind of level. And now everybody in late night follows in the Letterman tradition. Ferguson, even Jon Stewart, Conan, definitely Jimmy Kimmel, are all in the Letterman sort of biz- bizarro tradition. Leno was the only one that was still in the Carson tradition. I think when NBC made that decision about Leno, they thought that ultimately he was going to get the bigger audience. Well, it took him a while. Letterman took over for a bit. Leno, nobody ever talks about him as being innovative. Nobody calls him the greatest late night host. A lot of critics don't even like him. But you got to give him the fact that he, throughout this 22 years, with a little exception, he's been number one in the numbers.
Well, thinking ahead to Jimmy Fallon, though, he does a lot of the same, maybe not the same bits as Letterman, but he certainly has a lot of gimmicks. He plays games with the audience and even his own guests. And I imagine that he's going to bring some of that to The Tonight Show. Do you think that that'll change it all the way the audience responds via the ratings?
Yeah, well, that's what we're all we're all waiting to see. I mean, there is nobody. They couldn't. The only way they could have kept The Tonight Show Carson-like would have been to leave Leno there, because there's nobody left that's really working in that old Carson tradition. And NBC decided to take off their number one late-night host, hoping that they were going to start developing the next legacy of 22 years by they want to keep their older audience but also get a younger audience. Frankly, I think Fallon is a pretty good choice of all the people out there in late night, in that, as you point out very correctly, he does a lot of that weird stuff that started way back in 82 with Letterman. He does those thank you notes, which is a very bizarre and I think interesting thing. He does those musical, you know, duets with Springsteen and his Bieber imitations and all of that. But at the same time, he's a little more readable, I think, to a traditional audience. He's so likable. He's so amiable. He's hard to not like. And I think there may be a chance that here's somebody who could appeal to the college student and maybe even eventually to the college student's grandmother as well. And that's what NBC is counting on. And I think Fallon may have a better chance of doing that than anybody else in late night. But again, you just never know.
Well, Leno left once already, and you might want to remind us what happened there and why he came back so quickly.
Yeah, well, that was so we just discussed Late Night Wars 2, when NBC ham-handedly had two candidates, and Leno was the one that won out on that. Then we get to Late Night Wars 2, and it's as though NBC had learned nothing, because once again, you've got Leno coming to, they had announced when Leno was going to retire. Leno had agreed with that. They'd announced that Conan would be his replacement. Conan, of course, had been doing the show right after Leno, as Letterman had been doing it after Carson. And then the time rolls around, and Leno decides that he doesn't want to go gently into the night. And he doesn't want to retire. So there's all this tension. Once again, NBC is stuck with one slot and two people, this time Leno and Conan. They don't want Leno to leave to do a late-night show at another network, which they assumed he would do at that point. So what they decide to do is have it both ways. They also don't want to lose Conan. So Conan gets the Tonight Show, and Leno, they decide to give a primetime show 5 nights a week at 10 o'clock, which, if it would have worked, would have been a brilliant idea. By this time, NBC could not get an hour-long drama on the air that was successful to save their lives. They had all these hour time slots they needed to fill. And dramas are really expensive. If this Leno thing would have worked, it would have been cheap. It would have been 5 nights a week. It would have been brilliant. So they put Leno on 5 nights a week in primetime, and it didn't do well at all. He was number one in late night, but he couldn't get an audience in primetime. So they had to pull the plug on it, and then they were stuck with a really interesting decision. Essentially cut Leno loose, or do the radical thing, which is what they did, which is to take Conan off of The Tonight Show and put Leno back. And by the time that was done, the bad feeling against Leno was so strong, especially among comedians. People like Jimmy Kimmel would make really, really pointed jokes at them. Conan ends up going to TBS, where he is now. Leno goes back to The Tonight Show. And we would have thought that Leno's lead would have then ended because of all the bad blood and bad feelings and all the rest of it. But it didn't. Leno shoots right back up to number one after Conan had struggled with his numbers. And it seemed like no matter what happened, Leno was going to be number one in late night. And that's exactly where he left last week.
We're talking with Robert Thompson. He's a professor of television and pop culture at Syracuse University about the departure of Jay Leno and the changing face of late night across a couple of time slots here. We're taking your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, or you can find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the changing face of late night this hour with Robert Thompson, a professor of television and popular culture and the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, and taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. Just before the break, Robert Thompson, you mentioned that Leno went out on top, that his ratings were still the highest among his peers. Is that to say that the audience really wanted to see a change, or do you think that there's going to be some disappointment around the corner as a new host takes over The Tonight Show?
Well, I don't think. I think Fallon will probably, when he debuts next week, will probably do pretty well in the beginning. Generally, when people just start these new jobs, they do really well because people want to look in and see what everybody's talking about. I think Fallon will probably settle into numbers that'll be a little lower than Leno's. That's what's always happened when someone has taken over that show. But I don't know. Over the course of time, I think Fallon may. I think he may end up holding on to the number one position there. His competition over at CBS, of course, is David Letterman, who, far be it from me to say a bad word about, who totally changed late night in fascinating, interesting, revolutionary ways. But he's been on for a long time, NBC from 82 into the 90s, CBS since then, and he just, it looks tired. It looks like he's kind of exhausted himself. So Fallon, you know, could very easily keep tonight's lead there. And then the biggest competition is over on ABC with Jimmy Kimmel, who has had a really good couple of years, probably the best interviewer on the air right now on late night comedy, and is doing a lot of stuff and is very conscious of internet culture and all the rest. But then again, so is Fallon. So we'll see. I think Fallon is, like I said before, I think he's a good sort of transition. He's both very much, onto all of the new and digital ways in which media is delivered. But at the same time, he's got that boyish sort of charm. He couldn't be any different than Johnny Carson, but he's got a certain bit of Carson's likability. Whereas Fallon, even though he was Mr. Nice Guy, always had a little bit of a robotic quality to him.
I'm surprised to hear you say that Jimmy Kimmel is the best interviewer that you've seen. I have to admit, I haven't watched much of his show because, in my mind, I still think of him and Adam Carolla on The Man Show
on
Comedy Central.
Jumping on trampolines.
Yeah, I can't take him seriously. So that's probably more a reflection of me than of him, since we all change with time. But it makes me think, too, about the evolution of late-night talk shows and how they were revered, how they were treated on the air, and how the guests also revered them. You would see, say, in the 1960s, guests would come in formal wear. It was a glamorous occasion to be on The Tonight Show. And now you have some sophomoric humor and, I would say maybe a less classy appeal. Would you agree with that?
I would, and then that's true. People have jumped up on David's desk and David Letterman's desk and exposed, you know, taken their tops off, flashed him, that kind of thing. But for all of the perhaps better sartorial decisions of the early years, let's remember people also used to go on the Tonight Show really, really drunk. We had some of the most famous episodes where you'd have, a bunch of, these old school comics on there. And it was like sitting in on a trip to the bar after they'd all done their sets, kind of thing. And that was interesting, and it was funny, and it was all the rest. But it was, it was hardly models of good behavior. But you're right. By and large, the late night talk show, and by that, in the old days, we're essentially talking about Carson, was a what word should we use? Perhaps a slightly classier affair.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just seeing select highlights in the, rerun reels and all those things.
Although, I suppose Carson's most famous clip that we see to this day is that one with the guy throwing the hatchet that lands, right between his legs kind of thing, which I suppose is a little bit bawdy for the time.
Let's take a call from John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was wondering, where are the female hosts? I'd like to see Rachel Maddow, maybe, with a show like that.
Yeah, well, the female host question is a big one. I mean, if you look at the history of late night, it is amazing how not only how few female hosts there are now or there have been through history, but how few times they've even tried it at all. The one big glaring exception is Joan Rivers, who had been Johnny Carson's second in command. She'd been his host when he went away. Matter of fact, Joan Rivers often got higher ratings on The Tonight Show when she was hosting than Johnny did when he was there. But she had a little thing with problem with Johnny. She ended up going to her own late night talk show back in the old Metro Media stations that were about to become the Fox Network. That didn't last long. Arsenio became the person doing that, and Joan Rivers now has done all kinds of other things on cable. With the success she had and with the number of good female comics out there, I am surprised how few we've had. Rachel Maddow, I think, very much could get a different kind of show than she's doing now. I'm not sure I would... She's a comedian, per se, though she still tells lots of jokes. The interesting is Joy Behar, who has been on The View for so long, going off now and doing stand-up again. Even though she's older than most people starting a late-night show, I don't know. That could be a possibility for her after she's been out doing stand-up again for a while.
Mm. 1-800-642-1234 is our phone number. That's 1-800-642-1234. And as John mentioned, there we haven't seen any women as a full-time permanent host in late night yet, but it does seem like Saturday Night Live has been a breeding ground for new talent. Jimmy Fallon coming from the Weekend Update desk and now Seth Meyers in the late night time slot. But, alongside Jimmy Fallon was Tina Fey, and alongside Seth Meyers was Amy Poehler. They've gone on into the sitcom world, but why not late night? Why is it self-selection on their part, or is it a network choice to put men in these time slots?
Well, I mean, maybe part of it is just that's the way it's always been. There's this tradition, and network chooses men simply because they're looking for someone to be the next X, Y, or Z, and all of those X, Ys, and Zs are men. Not that Tina Fey made a bad decision. Going to 30 Rock and getting a bunch of those syndicatable, rerunnable reruns under your belt is a much more lucrative thing to do. And let's face it, it's late-night television doing that every single day of the week or at least 4 days a week is a really tough grind. I suppose the one person who would have been the real most obvious candidate, Ellen DeGeneres. She was a stand-up. She was very good at comedy, great at interviews. Everything she had would have been perfect as a late-night host. She ended up going first to sitcoms. She had two. or one that mutated into a second, and then she went to a daytime show.
Yeah.
So she's and that's maybe it's oddly enough, that seems to be how, and maybe this isn't odd, the guys do late night and the women dominate daytime. You look at all the superstars of daytime, Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, Rosie O'Donnell, the women of The View. That's where you really have women dominating. But you got some men in daytime. You've got virtually no women in late night unless you count the cast of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Let's fit Mike and Nina in before the news real quick because I think he has some comments on this. Mike, how are you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Go ahead.
How's it going?
Hey.
You see, I just got here. I was speaking when I was driving. Yeah, you just touched on a comment I was going to make about Ellen DeGeneres. I think, you know, if she was to go to late night, I believe that she probably still would have a good following because she's a, like Jimmy Fallon, a pretty likable person. And, you know, and I think she has crowds, you know, from all aspects of life. And that was it, I guess. Mm-hmm. You had just said it right.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, and we could talk a little bit more about this after the news, Robert Thompson, but it might seem as more catering to a certain audience. If more women are watching in the daytime, maybe they want to see more women during the daytime. And we can explore that a little bit after the news. We're talking about the changing face of late-night television with Robert Thompson, a professor of television and pop culture at Syracuse University, and taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, or you can leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Jay, for giving me such great advice for The Tonight Show, like, you don't need a monologue, and have you ever thought about getting bangs?
Yeah.
Really nice of you.
Yeah, no problem.
And finally, thank you, Jay Leno, for carrying on the proud tradition of The Tonight Show host with such humor and class, and for being nothing but gracious and generous to me over the past years. I will do my best to make you proud every single night. Thank you.
Well, I think you'll do a great job.
That's Jimmy Fallon taking over as the Tonight Show host starting next week, bidding farewell to Jay Leno with one of his familiar bits, Thank You Notes. I'm Cynthia Schuster filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking this hour about the changing face of late-night television with Robert Thompson. He's a professor of television and pop culture and the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Robert, before the news, we were talking about perhaps the selection of late night and daytime hosts as a reflection of its audience. Do you have any comments on that?
Right. Well, I mean, it's true. The audience in daytime is still more female than male, not to the extent it was in the 50s, back in the heyday of the soap operas, but it still skews that way. And the audience of late night tends to be more male. But I suppose part of that, the question is, are there more males watching late night because there's only males hosting? And would a larger female audience come if you put somebody in there? And that's something you have to wait and see and wait until they do it, which at this rate might be a long wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, and meanwhile, all the hosts, regardless of gender, are white. We saw Arsenio Hall come back, but he's not necessarily a fresh face to late night. Who do you think would have been maybe a more a fresh choice in terms of an African-American comedian to be put in behind the host desk?
Yeah, well, George Lopez had one, and then George Lopez kind of stepped aside for Conan, and then poor George went off the air. Arsenio, of course, came back. You know who I always really liked when she was on talk shows as guests was Wanda Sykes, who's got kind of a long resume. She's both African-American and a woman. Whenever I hear that there may be a vacancy, I always think that she'd be a good candidate. But now there's no vacancies for a while.
Well, talk a little bit about, with Leno's departure, whether or not, you know, he spoke as if this was his choice, it's his time to go. It certainly is time to turn over the mic. Is that the truth, or was he pushed out the door a bit?
If NBC 6 months ago said, you know, Jay, you're still number one, we think maybe we are pushing this a little bit, would you like to go five more years? He would have taken it in an instant. I have no doubts whatsoever about that. I do not think Leno was ready to leave The Tonight Show. I'm not sure Leno would have ever been ready to leave The Tonight Show. And if there would have been a way for him to stay at it, I am pretty sure that he would have. On the other hand, I think he also realized that he could not pull one of these coups that he had done last time, that he had to nicely and gracefully this time pass this over to Jimmy Kimmel. To Jimmy Fallon, the two Jimmys now, pass it over to Jimmy Fallon and do it with all the kind of obsequious graciousness that that he did and the way each of them treated each other. He could not have survived another one of those acerbic things that happened with Conan. But short answer to your question is no, he would have loved to stay at The Tonight Show.
So why did they feel it was time to move on?
Well, they felt that way back in 2009. Mm-hmm. I think they want to start developing. First of all, I think they realized that if they're going to keep people like Fallon, and just that when they made the last decision, keep people like Conan, they had to, you know, promote them. They had to show them that they had a future at that network and that Jay wasn't going to be in that position forever. So part of it was to keep the future people intact, or there at NBC. And I think the other was to start building on that legacy. And even though they're number one, to hopefully bring their age, their demographics down a little, which are, of course, more lucrative. That's, I think, the reasoning. Some people would argue, and it's not a bad argument, that the guys in number one, leave him there until he falls out of number one. The counter argument to that would be then when that happens, if you've lost all of your other big people to other networks, you may have set up a legacy of not being number one anymore.
Let's take a call from Jerry in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering if Johnny was forced out too. I thought I heard that earlier in the program.
Well, there's been talk about that. I mean, as you recall, but Johnny had talked about retiring many, many times and then just never did it. And then ultimately he went right up to just about the 30-year mark. There had been, I mean, clearly NBC had talked about his retiring. NBC was anxious to get first Letterman into that slot, and Letterman was anxious to get into it. But I think by the time that finally happened, that was a relatively mutual decision on their two parts. But I'm not entirely certain about that.
You mentioned the Late Night Wars 1 earlier in the hour, and it certainly seems that there's a history of tension between NBC and its talent. I pulled a clip from the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where he spoke with David Letterman about that issue, about Leno being selected, and he asked Letterman how pissed off he was, to quote him directly, but here's a little excerpt of his response.
There were rumors in the paper you were going to firebomb NBC, you were going to do all these.
Well, I hate waiting in lines, but I do it.
So that was part of a lengthy exchange, too. So what bridges did Letterman burn? And he's still in his time slot after many, many years. How has he fared with all of this drama going on over at NBC to this day?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first time, of course, he was right in the center of it. The second time with Conan and Leno, Letterman was you know, sort of able to comfortably sit at the sides, as he was with this transition as well. But let's remember, he's sitting at the sides in second place. He's been first only for a little while. It's interesting that you bring that that clip up, though. On the last day of Carson's Tonight Show, after this extraordinarily long, beloved run, all these people in tears that he was leaving, Bette Midler the night before had sung him a song, that whole big thing. And he, on his very last day, Carson never mentions Leno. Never says, you know, now I'm passing the torch on to Leno, or now watch Leno next week. Leno doesn't even get a mention. Carson was clearly on in Camp David for that that battle, and we know now, of course, legendarily, that Carson used to actually pass jokes to Letterman after he retired. So we know where Carson fell on that that thing, and I think most comedians have fallen on the side of not Leno in these battles. Kimmel, Letterman, all those people, after the Conan debacle, got really quite vocal against against Leno for a while. Kimmel did an entire episode dressed up and in makeup and doing an impersonation of Leno, which was hilariously vicious.
Now, if I were Leno, I would be, I guess I would feel less welcome to come back to my show. I might just walk away altogether. Why did he keep coming back?
Well, I think, A, he had one piece of information in his pocket that was hard to argue with, and that was, look, guys, I'm number one. I get the highest rating. Mm-hmm. So whatever the critics say, which was often not very nice, whatever my colleagues say, which could be not very nice as well, he had that one datum that he could constantly lean on, which was that he was the most popular out there. And he talked about this in the in his 60 Minutes interview not long ago, which is that, you know, when it gets right down to the core of the American audience, he was the choice. That was reason number one. And reason number two, of course, was that he loved doing this so much. I mean, Jay Leno is a very odd human being by all accounts of people who know him intimately. He is doing what he does almost every waking hour of the day. In, I used the word robot before, and I don't mean to be insulting, but there it was really a sense that Leno was kind of a comedy machine, very efficient and very good at what he did. But I think one of the reasons, no matter what happened, he wanted to stay in that position is that I think he was most himself when he was in that Tonight Show chair.
Our guest is Robert Thompson, a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. We're taking your questions and comments about the change of the guard over at The Tonight Show and at Late Night at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the changing face of late night with Robert Thompson. He's a professor of television and pop culture at Syracuse University. He's also director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture there as well. We're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Of course, Robert Thompson, right after The Tonight Show is Late Night, and Jimmy Fallon is moving on from there to take over The Tonight Show. And SNL alum Seth Meyers is taking over at Late Night. Do we have any sense of how he's going to do? I remember when Jimmy Fallon took the leap from the Weekend Update desk and took over Late Night. He was a little stiff at first. He eventually kind of grew into his own as the host of a late night talk show. What about Seth Meyers?
Well, I think probably Seth Meyers will have a trajectory not unlike that. And he's going to, I think, continue to be doing these news-oriented sorts of things. But it's one thing to do that once a week. It's another thing to do it five nights a week. They're going to have a lot more material than they did. But we know he's comfortable in that kind of behind-the-desk sort of delivery. As a host, as an interviewer, as someone doing a monologue, that we're going to have to wait and see. And I think he probably will have to grow into that. The nice thing about the late night slot, though, is you've got a little more, it's a little more relaxed to grow into it. Letterman started that in 82, and he was doing some of the most peculiar stuff. And it was so late at night that it really didn't matter, and he had very little competition then. Now there is more late-night competition, but I think it's a little more laid back in getting your legs. It's a great place to, well, let's face it, it's becoming the farm team for the late-night job. That's what it was supposed to be for Letterman. Didn't turn out that way, and that is, of course, what happened with Conan, and then it didn't turn out that way, and now that's happened with Fallon.
Mm-hmm. And as we look at it, one of the things that NBC is really kind of building up for us is the fact that the Tonight Show is coming back to New York City. And Late Night with Seth Meyers is still going to be in New York City. So, and we have Letterman in New York City. What significance does that have that the show is based out of New York City instead of L.A.?
Well, the old idea for having these in L.A., and the reason Johnny moved there way back in 1972, Tonight's been in Burbank for a long time. And he moved there simply because the stars were there. It was easier to get access to them. If you had a cancellation or whatever, a quick call and somebody could be there in 25 minutes. Now, of course, there are a pretty big concentration of stars in New York as well, and we have airplanes now, but actually, I'm not so sure. Our planes may be faster, but with security and everything, it's probably harder to get from L.A. to New York now than it was in 1972. But it really does seem like New York is where the action and innovation is. And part of that has to do with the fact that that's where Jon Stewart is. And for all of people saying late night's no longer relevant and why do we care or talk about this, they're all dinosaurs, The Daily Show, even though its numbers are by no means huge, is a really important part of the civic conversation in this country. It, once upon a time, they used to call it the most important television show in America. And while that was an overstatement, I think it is a pretty important show. It comes out of New York. Conan, of course, had come out of New York. And Leno came out of L.A. And I think there's two reasons why it's moving. One, Fallon wanted to do it in New York. Secondly, I really think Fallon and company want to distance themselves from the Leno regime. In spite of Leno's success with The Tonight Show, you do it out there, you do it on that stage, there's a sense that you're still part of, connected to Mother's strings. By moving that thing to New York, it really does completely distance the franchise from Leno. It not only goes back to the pre-Leno era, it goes back to the early Carson era.
Fred and Wheaton wanted us to address the role of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. You brought Jon Stewart up just a moment ago. How do their shows add to the offerings in late night, and have they at all affected the material, perhaps, that the late night hosts use in their monologues?
I think every comedian has had to come to grips with what Jon Stewart has done. I mean, he started out, he took over from Craig Kilborn on Comedy Central in 99, I think, and he was doing the same old kind of goofy college jokes. And then come the 2000 elections, Jon Stewart really kicked in, and that show became a really important piece of political satire. And late night television had not done that. Johnny Carson told jokes about politics. He was certainly not a political satirist or a great political commentator. And I think since Jon Stewart has become this respected, I think important is not too far to say what that show does. I think all of the late night comedies have had to at least look at what they do and then act accordingly. Now, Conan is not going to go into big, heavy political humor. Fallon is probably not going to do it. But Letterman, who used to be almost aggressively apolitical, moved very much more in that direction during the years that Stewart was starting to make a real splash in late night. Now, Stewart and Colbert do very different kinds of shows. They're not these, they both have interviews, but there's not these monologues and whatever. They're parodies of a certain kind of cable news show. Stewart as a nightly news person and Colbert a Bill O'Reilly type of show. Mm-hmm. So they're very different than what we're seeing all these other late night hosts do, but they are very significant, I think.
Going back to Carson's legacy, it sort of lived on in Jay Leno because Carson discovered Leno and Ellen DeGeneres is still around as well. Who did Leno discover that kind of put this person on our radar?
Well, I don't know. Leno had a lot of guests on that. I mean, you know, by being on The Tonight Show was still a big deal in the Leno era. Not as big a deal as it was back in Carson. Let's remember, Leno not only was helped along by Carson, but Leno made a lot of appearances on Letterman's show that certainly helped him along as well. I don't know. Your callers may come up with somebody. I'm blanking right now of saying anybody I can point to that Leno really kind of discovered and nurtured. But I'm sure you could point out to a lot of people that he had on for the first time who went on to be big deals. So he had a role in that, of course.
What do the late night talk shows add not just to pop culture in this country, but perhaps to our culture as a whole?
Well, I think there it's still a place where you have this sort of mainstream variety show. Variety shows, of course, are gone from television for the most part. We used to have vaudeville. There's still a place where if on the evening news, which, let's face it, have a smaller number than when Cronkite was doing it, but still have a significant number, you get a digest of what happened in the culture that day. Nationally, internationally, and maybe some little frivolous stuff. And the comedies kind of present the clown's point of view. If the news is the serious side, the tragedians, then the comedies are the clown side. And let's remember, clowns are always the potential of the best insights ever. If you watch a production of Shakespeare's King Lear, the clown is the only guy in that entire play that actually really knows what's going on.
In our last minute here, what do you think the late night landscape is going to look like 10 years from now? Will it be much the same or different?
Well, it might be delivered in all kinds of different ways. Who knows what's going to go on with all this technological revolution. But, you know, 10 years is a long time to make a prediction in this medium because the medium itself is changing. But I think we're still going to have a lot of the same format kinds of late night shows. They might be a little different. They might not have the big live bands. But I think we're going to have comedians doing late night by whatever delivery systems we've got in 10 years. And I don't think it's absolutely impossible that a guy like Jimmy Fallon, who's only 38, 39 years old, could conceivably still be doing a show in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see a woman or a minority?
I sure hope so.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Robert Thompson. He is a professor of television and pop culture and the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture at Syracuse University. We've been talking about the changing face of late night talk shows. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's On Your Money, a special fill-in edition of On Your Money. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine, and we will have someone filling in for Kevin McKinley, who's on vacation this week as well. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.